Hey friends, and welcome to another episode of The Volume Knob, the songs that saved your life. This week, Mark and The Living Years. Hey friends, and welcome to the second last episode of season 5 of the show. I'm really excited to introduce you to this week's guest.
My name is Mark Abbott, and I am a Brooklyn-based storyteller and a horror fiction writer. But today I'm going to tell you a story about the song that saved my life, The Living Years by Mike and the Mechanics.
Holiday season is upon us. It's been upon us in the States for a little while now. And that means time with family. And time with family often means questions about how we get along, how we communicate, and how we get in the last word. Mark's story is a little bit about that. I'm not going to take too much away from it, but I'm going to let you know that I really enjoyed working on it and working with him. Why don't I let him take it from here?
So this song, The Living Years, means a lot to me. I loved the song when I was in high school, and it was just, I loved the melody and everything, but I never really paid much attention to the words. And I wouldn't pay attention to those words until many, many years later, where I realized it related a lot to both myself and my father. Now, here's the thing about my dad. We got along about as much as a teenage son and his father could. Growing up, he was always there for me. We were always hanging out and doing things. But as I got older, he became a lot more judgmental about who I was and what I wanted to do. And I'm telling you, there never seemed to be a time I could do anything right by this man. He was always making me do things he wanted me to do. You know, he had me doing piano lessons. He had me join the church choir. He had me join the Boy Scouts. And all of those things were enriching, and they were, to some degree, entertaining to me. But see, I was a nerd. I loved video games. I loved books. And I loved all things horror. And despite the fact that my father kind of liked the horror genre himself, he wasn't too keen on the way I embraced this whole thing, particularly when it came to the writing portion. See, I realized early on that I wanted to be a writer, and he just didn't jive with that. And when I told him this, he told me, well, you just need to get a real job. I said, but writing is a real job. No, trust me. That's fine for something you want to do on the side, but you need to have a job that pays and has benefits. This was our conversation from the time I mentioned I wanted to be a writer to the time I graduated college. And nothing I did could persuade this man into thinking otherwise. See, he was a New York City police officer with a pension and benefits, and he felt that that was the way to go. You could do whatever else you wanted to do in your life, but you had to make sure you had that steady job. And I would often say to him, well, you know what? I think the problem here is that you don't take me seriously. You think that this is a joke. It's like, well, it's not that I think it's a joke, but I mean, you haven't proven to me that this is something you truly want to be a part of. I would tell him, well, Dad, I went to college. I studied creative writing. You know, this is what I want to do. But no matter how many times I told him this, he wanted to make sure I got that good job with the benefits.
You give him kind of the voice of God when you're describing him. Like, describe your dad for me.
Oh, he was, He was a tall guy, kind of broad. Best way I could say he was a gentle giant. Back in the 70s, he had like the Shaft kind of mustache. I would always look at Richard Roundtree and look at him, look at my dad in that, and I could say, you know, he's kind of got that kind of look. That was him. But he was somebody that when he believed in something, he stood steadfast.
One thing Mark's dad stood steadfast on was his opposition to Mark's ambitions.
Things just over time progressively got worse. No matter what I did, he would just push back on it. Even when I got a job, he didn't like the job that I had. He would swear that it didn't have enough benefits in it, and he didn't like the pension package, and oh, it didn't have a 401k. And I'm like, you know, what is it with you with this job thing? Like, I need time to write. And he's like, I get that, but I just want to make sure that you understand that you're taking care of yourself and you have everything in place. You know what, Dad? Why don't you just come out and say that you just don't like this idea, that you just have no confidence in what I'm going to do as a writer? And he's like, listen, I'm not going to argue with this. Find yourself a good job with benefits. And I did. I found it on the set of Law and Order. I was happy as all hell that I got this job working as an official production assistant in the office. It had the pay, it had the benefits, it had what I needed to survive. But here's the thing. Regardless of me being on a popular television show, he still was weary about my future as a writer. Well, you're working as a PA, not as a writer for the show. Dad, that's going to take some time. You constantly use this term about taking time. How long do you think you need to work at this? I'm like, you know what? You need to let me do this. You need to let me move up the ladder slowly. Boy, they're not going to make you a writer on that show. You haven't bothered to even try to get a writing position on that show. All right. You don't think I can do this? Fine. And I said to myself, I'm going to prove to this man, I'm going to prove him wrong. So the next day, I went in to the production office and I asked for a position as a writer's assistant. And I was told, point blank, straight to my face, we don't hire writer's assistants. Okay, but I just wanted to let you guys know that that's what I wanted to do. I'm interested in being a writer. Okay, yeah, we hear you, but we don't hire people for those positions. Now, despite getting the turn down, I felt confident in what I did because I actually asked for the position. I actually proved to that man that I was serious about what I wanted to do. And I couldn't wait to get home and tell him exactly what happened. So my plan was to go home, call him up and say, hey, I asked for the writer's position. And you know what? They told me they didn't hire anybody for now. But hey, I did it. I asked. When I got home that night, before I could even call him, I got a call. Not from him, but from my buddy Mike. Mark, don't say anything. Don't ask me any questions. I need you to get on a bus and I need you to get over to your parents' house right away. What for? I'm like, man, I just got in the house, man. You know what? If my dad is there, put him on the phone. Mark, just do what I say. Get a cab, get a bus, but you have to come to your parents' house. I didn't like the tone in Mike's voice. I knew something was wrong. And at that point, I didn't bother to question it. I just bolted from the house, got in a cab, and I took it straight to my parents' house. When I got there, outside was a police car. The front door was wide open. There were two officers standing there. And I get out of this cab and I run up the stairs. I see the officers. I see Mike. I see my mother. And in the distance, I see my father dead on the kitchen floor. He had passed away at some point that afternoon. My mom found him laying there. I couldn't speak. I couldn't find the words. I did know within a matter of seconds, anger just swept over me because I just started to ask myself, how could you die? How could you do this now? I just went and I asked for a position on this show as a writer. I was going to call you to tell you what I had done, and you do this to me. How do you do that? And I realized at that moment, he's not going to see what is going to happen with me. That part of my life, he will never witness it. And I just broke down for a multitude of reasons, not even just from his death, but just the whole idea that as his son, I would never get to show this man what I was capable of.
He must have left you and your mom pretty young, too.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't 30 yet when it happened. We knew he had a bad heart, but he had literally been to the doctor earlier that week, and the doctor gave him a clean bill of health and said, I don't need to see you for 6 months. And then 3 days later, he was gone. So it was tough. Months after we buried him, I went by to see my mother. I had left the TV show, gone out, gotten a corporate job, and I was doing the thing that he wanted me to do. I wasn't happy, but I was doing it. And my mother said to me, you know he believed in you, right? No, Ma, he didn't believe in me. He didn't subscribe to what I wanted to do, but I hope he's happy because I'm doing what he wanted me to. Well, you do know that one of the reasons why he was so afraid about you going into what you wanted to do was because he tried to do it himself. What? Your father, you remember all of those photos he used to take and everything? He wanted to be a professional photographer. He actually wanted to write a book one day, and he never got to do that. Okay, Mom, that doesn't make any sense, because if he wanted to do the same thing that I wanted to do, then why was he so against it? He wasn't against it. He was just worried that you weren't strong enough to take the rejections. Mom, life is full of rejection. And I'm sorry, I don't believe that. I've got something for you. My mother hands me this letter, and at first I didn't know what it was until I turned it over and realized that it had come from an agent. And then everything started coming back to me. When I was in college, I had tried to get an agent and I had sent this letter out, and I'd gotten this was my first official rejection letter. But there was something on the rejection letter that wasn't there before. Handwriting. My father's handwriting. It was a note that simply said, "Son, don't let this get you down. Keep at it." Mom, I've never seen this. Where did you get this? It was with your things in the basement. But I thought I threw this out. So he probably found it, left you that note, and put it on your desk, and you probably just tossed it to the side without even realizing it. You see, he always believed in you. He just was afraid for you. He just wanted you to make the right choice and be prepared just in case. And it brings me back to the song, The Living Years, and a particular verse from that song that I never truly understood until that moment. I know that I am a prisoner to all my father held so dear. I know that I'm a hostage to all his hopes and fears. I just wish I could have told you in the living years.
Oh, crumpled bits of paper, filled with imperfect thoughts, still to conversation.
Hey, friend, thanks for listening. It's something that means a lot to me to hear from listeners and to know that you're out there and that you also love good stories about good music. If you know anyone else who might like good stories about good music, I'd be touched if you shared the show with them or if you followed us on social media. The handles on Instagram are at @volume_knob, and on Twitter we are at @volumeknob1. That's the number one. The Volume Knob is a weekly exploration of stories about music and the way it makes us feel. It is produced by Semlement Audio, and it's made by me. All the ways. Mixed, edited, hosted, written. My name is Keith Seary. Don't forget to get over to the TVK website. That's www.volumeknob.net, where you will find show notes about this episode, including a whole bunch of links about Mark. And many thanks to Mark for his time and talent and bravery this week. Finally, here's Miles with his 30-second review of The Living Years. All right. So, what did you think?
I feel like this is like a closing credits song. Like, not the one they play while the credits are rolling. But it's like, plot is resolved. Everybody's having fun, and then there's like some nice walking between the characters, you know. You got like the main characters are like walking up like a hill or something, joking about the big adventure they just had or whatever, while like listening to this. Well, like, no, this is playing in the background.
Right. Did you think anything of it lyrically?
It's very pretty. It's a nice song. I like it.
I will see you again next week for the final episode of this season of The Volume Knob. Yet one more story about the songs that saved your life.